everyone. In today's Stakeholder Podcast, I'm speaking to Amanda Horwitz, author and writer. I'm Lynn Joffe, producer of Solid Gold Storytime, and it is my privilege to welcome to the studio Amanda Horwitz, author of Lulu and Sarge in the Bee Sting Operation. Welcome, Amanda.
Wow, Lynn, wonderful to be here. I must say, I've been following your writing, and it's a privilege for me.
Well, the privilege is mutual. We've known each other a very long time, and it's fantastic to get back together under these circumstances.
Absolutely. Okay. Share wordplay.
So you had your book published, Lulu and Sarge in the Bee Sting Operation. Came out when?
I would say about 9 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's start with maybe you should tell us a little bit about what the book is about.
That's a good place to start. Look, I live with Duxies. I always have. I basically am run by them. And I really was fascinated by their different personalities. And my partner and I always watched them. And the one is so lazy, so busy with a gut feel, enjoying life, rolling around, wanting tummy rubs, wanting snacks. And the other one is very parat, really on the ball, a little Duxie, a type who needs to prove herself. And the expression on the ball comes in the book a lot because Lulu wants to do everything right and be recognized.
So your book is actually based on the characters of your living actual dogs.
Yes. And then one takes it further because actually you stop doing anything when you're dog mad. So you're in the home all the time. You're watching these creatures, and if you've got a modicum of a brain, you have to do something with just being in a home with the dogs. Well, I don't know why I call them dogs, they're the children. But we started seeing them as little people in a police force, because what do? We watch crime on Netflix, and we sit with the dogs. So Lulu became the DCI, the very parat one who wants to solve crimes, and Daisy, no, it's actually, well, now it's Daisy. It was Frankie. It's Sergeant Frankie was the handlanger, who's the one who sits in the HQ and stamps dockets and is always busy in the lunchbox, taking stuff out, making the dockets dirty, irritating Lulu, who's out there. And what the story's based on is in the animal kingdom, the animals get up to nonsense. I mean, as bad as us thugs. You know, human thugs. And quite rightly so, Lulu feels the only way we're going to set any kind of example for people is if we solve those crimes in the animal kingdom. So I spent a bit of time researching, not being the biggest ecologist, finding out where are the crimes committed. The one that was really interesting in the first one for me was the bees. They steal from other hives. And I thought, that's quite interesting. If I marry that the bees are stealing and crime, how about the bee sting operation? And then the word play started, and I've never been happier. Words, 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 play, 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 just like the Dachshunds.
Which is very interesting because, as everybody knows, both of us really make our living out of copywriting, which is where the discipline, the brief, the strategy comes in. And we can do all of this creative work, and it kind of harks back to the industry in which we were raised to do words, and in which the words rewarded us by paying us.
Completely. And, you know, there were the copywriters who were averse to a pun. They felt it was cheap. Never have I disliked a pun. I couldn't be happier. It's a punny, funny, idiomatic tale, T-A-R-L, mind you, that I had such joy writing because, you know, I think the thing for me is life's hard enough. And so play brings so much joy, and doggies teach you to do that. And so, you know, as much as I laugh at that, I have really become a homebody with them. They teach me amazing things. Every day we go for a walk, you're in the moment with them. You see how they do things with absolute gusto, you know, not half an attitude and a sarcastic remark. It's done with so much joy. And honestly, I'd really have thought if we could follow the path of doggies, we could be a much better species for sure.
Okay. So I'm just going to bring it. I agree. Imagination, yeah, and anthropomorphization, and all of that brings joy, because you can't really write without the joy. So I want you to sort of segue the doggy thing into the fact that you had to sit down at a desk at a typewriter in Bleed. So tell us how your writing process about these amazing little dogs, how did that transform?
Well, I think it's a metaphor. I don't always know my figures of speech. With age, I knew them once. But there is that metaphor about writers either being gardeners or architects. So the architect is the one who plans. And I'm quite sure for your book, you had to do a great deal of planning.
There's pantsers and planners. Seat of the pants a lot of the time. And then you knit it together. You just set yourself free on the words. And then what, you sort of write drunk, edit sober, kind of. Do your unconscious work and then sit down dead sober and tidy it up. And then see what you've written sometimes. You don't know what you're going to write.
Well, I would classify myself as a real constant gardener because I rambled, hey, like a real rambling garden, not one of the nice manicured ones with topiary. Nice and rambling. And I just rambled. But the thing is, for some odd reason, I love rhyming. And so it was a lovely challenge to think, how can you develop a character in a rhyme scheme? And there still has to be a narrative because the kids don't want to be just, Lulu and Sars. They're not interested in my dachshunds. Where's the story? Are they going to capture the bee? So are they going to discover where the missing honey is? Who's going to win? Who's going to get stung in this operation? So there was, a narrative to follow.
A story.
But then for me, they're very different personalities. And I want that to come through. The very importantly is that it's a child-parent read because Lulu and Sarge are very different characters. And we are very different. We deal with very different characters in the world. So there's the, I'm talking types, but there is the real Sarge type who wants to live for now, lives in the moment. He has an ice cream machine, will be absolutely distracted from the task at hand and wants the flaky and ice cream. Lulu is on a mission to save the world and she thinks if everyone's going to be eating ice cream and running off to, the Wimpy, nothing is actually going to get solved. And she is that determined personality. We've got them, the social, who wants things to be right. Otherwise, she doesn't believe you can get on. So I think for the parents, there's something interesting in exploring living in the moment versus doing your homework, doing the right thing, being the good child versus being the fun child, having a jaw. You live once, And so those, I really wanted to develop those two very different personalities, which the dogs really are. Okay. And in addition to that, the parent-child read is also very important for me because I think there's too much time spent on the phone. As you can hear, I'm a gardener. I ramble. So I hope you don't mind if I ramble. Just start the topiary if I'm rambling too much. But really, for me, this too much busy. Everybody's busy on the screen. One's on the iPad, one's on the phone. There's not enough communication between parents and children. And from what I've seen and what I've read, where parents are still reading to kids, even older kids, kids of 9 or 10, there's fantastic connection. There's a lot of laughter. There's discussion. And I specifically wrote it that it's a little bit difficult for 8 to 9 year olds without mom and dad. With mom and dad, it's a bigger jaw because they can discuss the.
They can take the characters. They can act it as a stage play.
Yes.
Because I've noticed in the book that you've got different color coordinations for each character. And of course, now you are on a podcast reading it yourself, which I had to drag you kicking and screaming to do, but it's actually available there for people to hear it. You don't have to be a Broadway star to do it, but you can actually engage. So I'm going to shift this to move on. I want to know your writing process. Tell us about the process. I know we know about the doggies. We know dog love. But how did you sit down every day? How did you go from the concept of the idea to the finished manuscript?
No, it was much more random than that. In fact, I would say I very much followed Frankie's personality type. I'm a freelancer. When work comes in, you grab it.
Priority.
So that was the priority. So this one got fitted in between, which isn't easy to do. I mean, one is inclined to rather go for coffee with a friend. I mean, I would rather chat to you than be disciplined. But yet when I sat down and wrote, it evolved. So I really did it gardener fashion of evolve. And it really could have been a 5,000 word storybook. Fortunately, I was whacked into line by an editor who's done this a kind of work before. She was great. And she said, listen.
It's too long.
No. Where are you going? And I had, I don't know how many characters and subplots. And then they were still going to the SPCA to fetch other dogs who played in a band. And she said, stop it. What's your storyline? Let's make a beeline for the ending.
Of course.
And she was fantastic. She didn't do that much, but she really knocked me into shape. If you want to write a children's book, I didn't really know what I wanted to do other than a homage to Lulu and Sarge. And then I said, but I don't know if it's a children's book because I think it's a dog lover's book. No, maybe it's a child parent read. And it really properly evolved, but it did take forever because it was being fitted in. And I'd then also have to be a bit in the mood.
No, but just hang on a second. Writing in advertising. Here comes the brief. He's on the phone as we speak. There's a deadline. There's a fee and you do it and you finish it. So are you saying, because I understand that the need for the discipline and then the procrastination fits into the discipline and yet writing is the joy. So why are we procrastinating? Why are we looking for things to do other than the writing? So what inspired you or what pushed you or what encouraged you to actually finish? You could still be writing this 10 years later.
You know, I think it's interesting that point because when we get a brief, we've done advertising forever. Mm-hmm. There's not even that much to prove. Like we know the tricks.
That's confidence.
Yeah, but I think there's a great fear in exposing your passion. And I think we're more hesitant to produce our own work, or I certainly felt more self-conscious about producing my own work than a brand, and they're paying for me, and I've got the formula.
And you can hide behind it.
Yes, and just say, oh, well, I had to do that advert for whoever the brand is. But no.
Come on, don't you put your passion as much into your work?
But it's a different kind of passion. I think you're putting yourself on the line with writing, and there's somewhere, as much as you really want to do it, there's a part of you that is quite relieved when a brief comes in. It's going to pay for the dog food and the snacks, because believe me, Lulu and Sarge eat well. They're not thin dachshunds. And so it's a weird thing. Like you're completely passionate about it, but there is a part of you that thinks, oh, I wish other work would come in. I can really be busy. I don't have
distraction.
To.
Distraction.
Yeah. And the other thing is I paid for the editor and I paid for the artist, who both of them were unbelievable. But somehow when I was paying for them, somehow there was that discipline of, well, Lisa needs to read it. She's waiting for it. Deadline. And so there is a peculiar thing about us being programmed to.
I love a deadline.
I also do. I think I don't.
There's a deadline. And in fact, I read something about Madonna once. And in a sense, not that we're comparing ourselves, although a discotheque in communist China, they call me Madonna, firstly, success breeds success. So if you're doing it all by yourself in an absolute vacuum, it's very difficult to evaluate. And then I think there's a twist. And, you know, I wrote this very adult novel and it's still around and about. Because I had to proofread it and edit it and pull it apart and put it back together. By the time it was finished, I stood by every syllable almost. Phew. And then comes a time, in a way, and it's a question more than a statement, I stand by the book. I think that it's the best I could do. I don't think it's Shakespeare, but I think it's as complete as I could make it to be. Because otherwise, you know, with little kids, you wouldn't know when to take the picture away from them. Is that I then stand by it, and then whether the books were curvy or they were too small or they weren't stapled properly or there were some spelling mistakes, it's okay. There's almost a level of completing it, of finishing it. Did you have that sense?
I did when I finished it, but a peculiar thing happened. I became more anxious about the publishing process than the writing itself. So I loved writing it. And I loved working with Lisa and Gerda, who are fantastic artists and a great editor. And, you know, that creative process was fantastic.
So tell us about the production process of the book.
The production and the publishing.
So, Amanda,
do you see them as separate?
That's okay. So There are two processes. Right. There's production and publishing. Mm. Production is the physical making of the book. Mm. Publishing is, in a sense, all the marketing, the background. Mm. I understand that you went for a hybrid model from an English company. Mm. How did that go and what did it entail?
As I mentioned, the creative process was fantastic, but I had a lot of anxiety about getting this book published. There in the industry seems to be quite a fuss about if you're a published author or not. A lot of people said, why don't you self-publish? It will be a lot easier. You'll have more control over it. A typical creative, I don't like the production process. I never have. I'm old school advertising. Mm. I do the copy. I do the editing, but let somebody else do the packaging. I don't like packaging. And I was lucky enough always to have art directors and production people. So I feared that self-publishing might mean that I've really got to see the proofs come off, and then I must sit with a whole lot of books in the garage, should they be sold, and then busy writing, I wasn't for the schlep. And so I thought, okay, rather do two more ad campaigns, put money aside, work through the night, which I don't like doing, but work through the night so you've got enough money. Because I heard the one way that you can get published and then you've been recognized is with a hybrid publisher. Mm. And I'd seen mixed reports on Olympia, but I kind of liked the name and that it was an English publisher. Mm. And I thought, it took a year. Really? And it took a whole year. And there were big lags in between. And a lot happened in that year. And they weren't great things. We all have life. Mm. But life intervened. And I'll tell you what happened is I definitely took my eye off the ball. I have to take responsibility. When they sent me certain things back, I didn't check things carefully enough. Mm. Things like measurements. Measurements bore me. I say, let the art director do it. Big, big mistake. Typeface, size. Mm. So I can't blame them.
So, Amanda, if you were to publish again now, would it be the same book and how would you do it differently?
I would really love to find out more about self-publishing, and you've told me they're lovely people to speak to. I would go in a lot more informed. From people I've spoken to, self-publishing is not that difficult. Definitely my failing with the publisher was not being meticulous and keeping my eye on the ball. I felt they made promises. Maybe they weren't as strong as promises, but that they could get it into a South African bookshop, that they would do publicity for me. Boy, if I wasn't making my Lulu and Sarge videos daily and posting on Insta and Facebook, and by nature, I'm not really a social media person, but if I didn't, zippy zoo. What they did do, my book was all over the world. You can read it in Spanish, in Flemish, in whatever ish you want. The problem is if people don't know to read it, what's the point? So I was very flattered when it first came out. Lulu and Sarge in Das Bram. And Sporambli, I said, look, across the world, who could care? There are thousands of children's books, millions. And if you're not going to market it and punt it.
And punt yourself.
Yeah, and this was difficult for me. I did find the self-punt, especially on a day that I was confident and I did a self-punt that I thought was magnificent.
And
you get three likes and you think, I really don't want to do this. I don't want to do this.
But every single one of us in this world now is a brand. I actually went to a talk the other day of a publisher and somebody said, does it matter how many followers you've got? And I thought, oh, no, not this question. And she said, absolutely it matters. And in fact, I also read a thing that said, how long in advance when you've got a book coming out should you start your marketing? You know what the answer is? 2 years.
I would have thought 2 weeks.
No, because you've got to build up the excitement. The irony is that we're advertising floozies who don't do
it. It's so strange. Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. But there is something. There's something which I'd love to learn from you because you do it with flair. You really do.
Now we're going to cut to the present. We're a few months older. We're a few months in. We're doing a podcast where you're reading the book.
Yes. It's a very small book with big heart and a big story. And I think it really is something that can be shared with moms and children. Well, I don't know why it's moms, but adults, children, caregivers, children, teachers. It's a lovely break. And it introduces, well, this particular one, let's talk about pollination and let's talk about bees. And there's always a story. The next one, which you haven't asked about.
No, I was about to ask about it. Okay, all right, stop. So that was good. So what are you working on now in the children's space?
So I'm continuing the series because I really think there's such a lovely premise about these two little different types of duxies who are out there to solve. There are so many animals that get up to mischief. So the next one is called A Whale of a Tale. And in it, the whales nip off bait off the rods of fishermen. And so it's an interesting thing. Well, I suppose fish are people these days, although Donald Trump would say it's a fisherman or fisherwoman.
Definitely.
But anyhow, the point.
Fisher folk.
So they really are called. There's an urgent call on the line for them to go down to the seaside and go and see why the whales are taking the bait off the rods. All right. It's always straightforward. So once they get there, they start saying, there's overfishing and there are two sides to the story.
Nice.
But it's done in a fun way. So what it does, it introduces on a serious note the educational discussion around fishing, emptying our seas, why the ecology, why there's such an imbalance. But on the other hand, these poor fisher folk go from early in the morning with their little flasks onto the high seas to fish and well, the whales cleverly are nipping the bait off the rods.
Very clever.
There's always that dilemma. And then Lulu and Sarge need to, you know, find the solution to human problem versus ecological problem, which is often the problem.
But that what I love about that is that there's a message embedded, a serious message embedded in this lovely, frivolous tale. And I think that's one of the things that I believe in is having a core idea in a children's story that you can illustrate in the most simple, but not condescending, but just in the most beautiful way so that a child and the parent, because, I mean, there's always a parent, a child can't read at three, to say, Mommy, why is that happening? Or, Mommy, why is a doggy doing this? Or, I'm not ever eating whale again. What is the message of your story that you would like little children and their caregivers to take away?
I think that there needs to be fairness in the world. I think it doesn't matter about your shape, your size. I mean, the dachshunds are the most peculiar little doggies doing remarkable things. We need to have respect for one another, kindness and respect, humans for nature, humans for one another, nature for nature. And I think that when there's a basis, which is respect, I think we can get ahead in life. And so there'll always be that underlying story about how things got out of balance and how Lulu and Sarge and the canine elite unit managed to restore balance and really set an example of what's possible in life for us to live a beautiful, wholesome, content life together.
Amanda Horwitz, or as we know, Horwitz, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast moment. And we look very forward to reading and hearing Lulu and Sarge in the beasting operation. Thank you.
Lynn, thank you. It's really been such a wonderful, awesome interview.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.